Hello, I'm Anne Hurst, the terrified writer, and welcome to the Life is Scary podcast. I'm a writer who spent far too much of my life not writing what I wanted through fear, insecurity, and worries about what other people might think. Earlier this year, I decided to embrace the fearful me and let it drive me forward rather than hold me back. Life is Scary talks about what scares us and how we can deal with it so that we can live a full and fulfilled creative life. I'm pretty sure that's overstating it. It's me, wanging on. I hope you enjoy it though. Hello and welcome to episode 5. That was a bit of a hello, wasn't it? Sorry. Hello, welcome to episode 5. So if you're listening to this in real time, it's half term at the minute. It's very quiet this week. It's quiet in terms of getting hold of anyone. A little bit chaotic in households, I should imagine, though. Not usually so much for us because our kids are a bit older, but it is a bit messy and chaotic here because we've got builders, and also my son is downstairs playing some horrendous video game. Like, oh, how much of a mom do I sound when I say that? I'm sorry. He's playing Fortnite or something inappropriate. Anyway, it makes him scream and yell at the screen. Unfortunately, I decided to record during screen time. Why would I do that? It's a busy day. So yeah, half term. Thing with half term is routine goes out the window and everything gets a bit messy, doesn't it? I do and I don't like it when things get messy. So as an obsessive and a control freak, I do like to be organised and I like to be orderly and I like to know what I'm doing and when I'm doing it. But as someone who gets bored easily and who loves variety and spontaneity, the school holidays feed that. They kind of feed that part of me. So in bursts, only in bursts, I do love the unknown, the possibilities, you know. I mean, I love nothing more than an unplanned day. Oh, don't you just love that? An unplanned day, or even better, a free weekend. All those hours just stretching ahead of you, waiting to be filled. Oh, it's marvellous. I say that and then they get filled up and then you go, what have I done today? And then you've achieved nothing. Anyway, but one of the things I want to talk about today are these aspects of our personalities that contradict each other. You know, that sort of the control freak and the obsessive, but then the person who loves to do different things and who gets bored. We are, most of us, we're sort of like, we're paradoxes, aren't we? We're walking paradoxes. It's what makes us interesting. The reason I bring this up is because lately I've heard a lot of people saying, oh, I can't do that because I'm like this. I can't do this because I'm like X. I can't do this because I'm like Y. And I sort of ask, but are you like that? Or is there a part of you that's also not like that? Well, of course there is, but often, and this comes back to, remember the conversation I had in episode 3 with Sophie, that our perception of ourselves can stem from what we're told we are like as children, usually from adults, so teachers, parents and relatives, and sometimes from other kids like siblings and friends, etc. They always point out your flaws, don't they? They point out the things about you and you take those on board, or what most of us do. I really admire it when people don't. I really admire people who are resilient naturally and just the comments just bounce off them. But a lot of us, and I think if you are a creative person inherently, we tend to be sensitive souls and we kind of absorb comments. So not knowing any better, what we do is we believe it. We believe this stuff. And if it's left unchecked, we start to behave how we're expected to behave. So think back to when you were a kid and how many times did you hear people say things like, she's so shy. Oh, she's very confident. She's scared of this. He likes to do X. He doesn't like to do this. Oh my God. As I'm saying it, I can actually hear myself saying this about my own children. Why do we do that? You know, when you're young and you go, when I have kids, I am definitely not going to be like my parents or whatever. And I'm not going to be like them. And I'm not going to be like those teachers. And then you have kids. And before you know it, you're telling them not to wear a coat indoors or they won't feel the benefit, or not to go outside with wet hair because they'll get a cold, which is bollocks. Ah, guilty. I am so guilty of that. I have literally said, Sam is, da, 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 Dylan is like this, Sam is like this. You see, this is one of the benefits of being self-aware to an excruciating degree. It's like I've said to my kids before, I do have a savings account set aside just to pay for the therapy they'll need after I've messed them up good and proper. I mean, you know, what else am I here for? So what was I saying? Oh, yes. So, yes, at this juncture, I will point out I'm not a behavioural expert in any way. I'm not an expert in anything in any way. I am an observer, a human, and people just fascinate me. So, as a writer as well, human behaviour and how people interact absolutely fascinates me. I pay attention a lot of the time to how people are, and the tiny little nuances are the most interesting bits. So yeah, going back to behaviour that we're, or the things about our personality that we're told when we are small or younger, or even as adults. I mean, we can do it when we're adults. It can often make us behave this way, and then that behaviour can make us forget the other us, the other sides of us. And this is a major obstacle, and it can hinder creativity. Here are some examples of what I remember hearing growing up. And by the way, it wasn't all bad, so I'm not after any sympathy. But here's an interesting thing. It's a quick digression again. There's a wonderful podcast called We Are Women, and it's hosted by Viv Groskop. I may have mentioned it. There's an episode with Sarah Pascoe, the comedian. Actually, hang on. It might be Walking the Dog podcast. Two of my favourite podcasts are We Are Women and Walking the Dog. And Sarah Pascoe has been on both of them. So it could have been either one, but either way, I can recommend both of them. Anyway, Sarah Pascoe, as you'd expect, she's funny, she's fresh, and she's honest. And one of the things that she said on this podcast really resonated. She said, if you think about how humans have evolved, it's the stuff that doesn't serve us, you know, the bad stuff, generally, and again, I'm not an evolutionary expert either, but generally the bad stuff is what has helped our survival. The stuff that's made us afraid, it's wanted to kill us, or hasn't helped in our quest for food or for excellence. That's the stuff we shed and get rid of in order to step it up and raise our game. I'm talking in evolutionary terms. So, you know, that is why we notice the bad stuff, because it's quite important that we pay attention to the bad stuff, because it might help us on an evolutionary level. So we pay a lot of attention to the bad stuff and not so much to the good. This is why, for example, if you're a writer, you might get 100 good reviews for your book or your story, but the one you'll remember is the bad review. Is that right? Do you agree with that? I would totally agree with that. And now you know why. Because it's a helpful thing. It's in human nature. So these are just a handful of the negative things that I remember hearing while I was growing up. And one of them I've mentioned before. I didn't mention it in episode 3. So she's a show off. Anne, stop showing off. Just stop showing off. Oh, she's not shy. She's not shy at all. Come on, Anne, you're not shy, are you? No, you're not shy. Convincing me I'm not shy. What a drama queen. She's such a drama queen. What a drama queen she is. And the other one, the classic, oh, she's a bit of a wimp. Yeah, she's a bit of a wimp. She won't want to do that. Those are just examples. And if I just tackle each of those in time, okay, yes, I am a show off. And without repeating myself, because it was presented to me in a negative way, I am massively uncomfortable with it. But I am learning on a daily basis to be less uncomfortable with it. And hopefully one day I'll be really happy about it and just embrace it. She's not shy. Well, here's the thing. I am shy. I am very shy, and I have almost crippling social anxiety. It's true, and not many people know it, but there it is. And they don't know because I hide it very, very well. Now, in this instance, you could argue that telling me I wasn't shy was a good thing because it made me behave as though I wasn't. So I'm undecided about this one. It's quite good in a way. Yeah, big up the parents for convincing me I wasn't shy, because you've made me behave as if I'm not. On the flip side, it has meant that I have spent years wondering what the hell is wrong with me. If I'm not shy, why is it that my heart nearly bounces out of my chest, my tongue swells, and my mouth feels like the frickin' Gobi Desert whenever I enter a room full of people? Yeah, so I spent years going, I don't understand, I'm not shy, so what the hell's wrong with me? And then somebody told me about social anxiety, and I thought, oh my God, that is totally me. So drama queen, yes, I'll take that. Absolutely. I have behaved with like one many, many times on many occasions and regularly, in fact. And yeah, it is another source of shame, but it's a part of me that I'm going to have to, it's me, so I'm going to have to learn to like it. And yeah, wimp. Well, I'll agree with that too. I am scared of everything, as I've said. But the difference now is that I kind of own that fear. I've befriended it. We're on good terms. We have a mutual understanding. So I acknowledge its existence. And in turn, it lets me do the stuff I want. Yeah, I'm all these things. But I'm not just all of these things. And that's what I want to talk about, really. None of us are. We are all a mixed bag. We're a veritable soup of different characteristics, all at different levels, and that's okay. And some of those characteristics are positive and some of them are negative, and that's fine. That's what makes us human. I suppose what I'm saying is don't pigeonhole yourself and don't let other people pigeonhole you either. It's restrictive. And if we're going to express ourselves creatively, the last thing any of us need are restrictions. I mean, what restrictions do you put on yourself? I know I put them on myself all the time. So I guess it's just something to be aware of. Right, books. I talk a lot about books on the blog and I thought it was time to make some recommendations here on the podcast. So I absolutely love listening to biographies on Audible. Much, much more than fiction. With fiction, my attention span drops and I forget what's being said. But biographies, especially those read by the author, are fantastic. And what's even better are comedians. Oh, they're amazing, especially if the author reads them. So, like, for example, lately I've listened to Simon Amstel, Robert Webb, Jennifer Saunders, Dawn French. Although Dawn French, actually hers, is read by Lisa Tarbuck, who is also brilliant because there are some upsetting chapters in Dawn French's book about her dad and she said she didn't want to read them out loud, which is fair enough, isn't it? You know, it's her thing. I have just finished listening on Audible to Lily Allen's book, My Thoughts Exactly, and I absolutely loved it. I loved her honesty. I mean, at times it is almost painfully brutal. She too admits to being hyper self-aware, and the whole book just screams of self-awareness. She just tells it. There's very little sentimentality and she's not asking for sympathy. She's not even asking for empathy. That doesn't come across anyway. She just tells her story. And you find yourself, well, I found myself being completely drawn into this world that she must have gone through. I mean, her life is extraordinary, really. At the beginning of the book, she lists all of her personality traits. There are many, they are varied and they are contradictory and not all of them are complementary. But she wears this paradoxical nature with, what's the word, like not pride, pride's the wrong word. She's like stalwart. Oh, stalwart. I've never used that word out loud. I've just realised. Never used stalwart out loud. It doesn't sound right coming from my mouth. Have you ever done that? You hear a word and you go, I know, I love seeing it written down. I think it's a really good, strong word. Obviously, it is a strong word, but I've never heard myself say it and I don't even know if I'm saying it right. What an arse. Stalwart. Nah, doesn't sound right. Steadfastness. That's better. She wears it. She wears this contradictory nature of hers with steadfast resolution, I guess, is the best way to describe it. She's very upfront. And at times when she's reading, she sounds like she's fed up sometimes or bored almost, which, funnily enough, it works because some of the shit she's been through was tedious and relentless. I mean, the tabloids, how she was treated by the tabloids, how she was treated by the music industry, she did go insane. She did lose her mind for on many occasions and at many times. And that isn't a surprise at all when you hear what went on in her life. Anyway, I would really recommend it. She does polarize opinion. Some people can't bear her, but I am most definitely in the love camp. I absolutely love her. Listen, I mean, if I mention a book, by the way, if I mention a book, it's because I love it. I have a no bad review policy. I'm karma, you know, karma, absolutely. It's Halloween next week. Okay, so I'm going to recommend some books to read over Halloween. I love reading books over Halloween because I like to read a book that's scary. I have to say, I am not a Halloween fan. It's not because it scares me. I am just a bit of a Halloween Scrooge. I'm just not down with all that tat and dressing up and the crap in the supermarkets. I mean, it's just a big, huge marketing, money-making pile of balls, I think. And also, I do have bad memories of Halloween. I might even play some sad music over this because I'm going to just recount a small story of my childhood, Halloween in my childhood. Okay. So we didn't even have pumpkins up north. We had to hollow out a swede. Okay. We called them snannies. I thought they were turnips, but they weren't. I always called them turnips. And no, they were swedes because we didn't have pumpkins. Did I mention I'm from the Victorian era? Did I mention that at all? No. Okay. So yeah, we had snannies, which were actually swedes, and they were hideous and impossible to hollow out. So you'd be cutting your fingers and, oh, it was a bloody nightmare. And like people would have to be doing them weeks in advance because they take so long. I mean, it could take you like half a day to scoop out, you know, a teaspoon of a snanny. There was one year we hadn't been very organised. I didn't have my snanny ready and we didn't have one in the house even on Halloween night. But my friends, my little friends and I, oh God, I don't know how old I was. I must have been about eight or nine. But we lived in a tiny village. There's only about 50 houses. And my mam, called her mam because I'm from the north, we're in Northumberland. So picture it, Northumberland, very bleak, very sort of, very bleak, very remote, very rural, absolutely, you know, just surrounded by fields and sheep. That's it. And quite sort of, there's no shops. There were no shops. So she couldn't just nip up to the greengrocers to go and get me a snanny. So she had to hunt around. And the best thing she could find was a potato. It wasn't even a baking potato, I've got to be honest. It was just a potato, like from the sack, because we had a sack of potatoes. Again, Victorian era. Did I? Yeah. Okay. So she hollowed out this potato. I'm massively unconvinced, but Mam is very jolly soul. She's very positive. She's like me. She's very sort of positive and had a great attitude on life. So she said, "Now I'm going to hollow out. This will be perfect. You'll love it, honestly." So she hollows out this potato and puts a smiley face on it. And it was shit, if I'm honest. It was really crap, really pathetic, and not in the least bit scary. And of course, you know, it didn't fit the standard church candles that everybody else had in their snannies. So she found a birthday candle and she planted that in the bottom of the scooped out potato with the smiley face that looked a bit like an emoji, actually. It was shameful. It was humiliating. And I think even my little friends, when they came round to call on me with their massive snannies and their scary faces and all of that, I think they were even too embarrassed to take the piss out of me because it was so pathetic. I'd kind of taken it to a whole new level. We went out, and to make matters worse, we only got halfway round our tiny village before the lid of my potato had cooked under the heat of the birthday candle. I mean, that's how crap the potato was. It had cooked, and my string caught fire. So the potato fell to the ground. Anyway, I had to go home and Mam did offer to make me another one. But, you know, I declined because there's only so much social suicide I can commit in one evening. And I said to her, you know, school's going to be horrendous tomorrow as it is. So, no, let's not bother. It's all right. I'll just eat a bowl of cereal and sit by the fire. So, yeah, not great memories of Halloween. But I do love to read a scary book around Halloween because I might be the terrified writer, but I am definitely not the terrified reader. I love scary films, I love scary books, I love scary television series, the lot. Stranger Things, oh, amazing, love it. So here are three scary books that I'm going to recommend. The first one, which I read 3 years ago, actually, was Slade House by David Mitchell. I've got a hardback copy here. It's beautiful. The hardback is absolutely gorgeous. And I read it in one sitting because it's not a very long book, but it is a proper magical, spooky ghost story. It's fantastic. I'll read you a bit of the blurb. This unnerving, taut and intricately woven tale by one of our most original and bewitching writers begins in 1979 and reaches its turbulent conclusion around Halloween 2015. Because every 9 years, on the last Saturday of October, a guest is summoned to Slade House. But why has that person been chosen? By whom and for what purpose? The answers lie waiting in the long attic at the top of the stairs. Enter the sunlit garden of an old house that doesn't quite make sense. Too grand for the shabby neighbourhood, too large for the space it occupies. A stranger greets you by name and invites you inside. At first, you don't want to leave. Later, you find that you can't. It's amazing. It's just a wonderful ghost story, and I absolutely love it. So Slade House by David Mitchell. Tick, yes, read that one. The other one, which I read last year, is Devil's Day by Andrew Michael Hurley. And my sister's borrowing that at the minute, so I don't have it to read the blurb from you. And of course, I hadn't thought that I could just look it up on the internet. But anyway, Devil's Day is set in, what is it, a fictional northern town. And it's very atmospheric, and it centres around a legendary tale, is all I'll say. And it's very bleak, but it's very atmospheric, and it's beautifully written. It's very evocative, and it is genuinely quite terrifying. I don't know what I'm going to read this year over Halloween. I haven't chosen my book yet, but I did just read a book that was pretty bloody sinister, and that is in the shops at the minute in paperback. It's called Lullaby by Leila Slimani. That's L-E-I-L-A, and Slimani is S-L-I-M-A-N-I. Lullaby is a really creepy tale about a nanny, about a weird nanny, and this supposed, well, she's supposedly some kind of Mary Poppins figure who looks after children in this Parisian family. Again, it's quite a short read. It's only about 200 pages, but that's a really interesting take on the thriller and very sinister. And I wouldn't recommend it if you've got young children and you've just recently employed a nanny. I really wouldn't recommend you read it. Because it's bloody terrifying. Okay, so we're coming to the end, and it's time for What Scares You? Well, each week, as you know, I set a challenge for us all to do something that scares us, something that pushes us out of the comfort zone, or say yes to something that we instinctively want to say no to. Got to be honest, feels a little bit like I'm talking to myself here, which I probably am. That's okay, though. But if any of you are planning to do this, or if any of you have actually done any of these, please do let me know. You can contact me by email, anne@theterrifiedwriter.com. That's A-N-N, no E. Or you can find me on Instagram, send me a message. The contact details will all come up at the end. In the last episode, I said I'd already said yes to something, but I couldn't talk about it in case it didn't happen. And it was a bit confidential. But now I can talk about it. Next Tuesday, the 30th of October, between 7 p.m. and 10 p.m, I'll be part of a group of Suffolk bloggers taking over BBC Radio Suffolk for the evening. That's going to be so much fun. It was set up by Gemma Scopes. She writes a blog called How to Make Friends, which actually won a UK blog award earlier this year. And Gemma is hosting or co-hosting the show. She's the one that set this up, and she invited five of us to join her for How to Make Friends and Friends on BBC Radio Suffolk. If you don't live in Suffolk, or if you can't tune in for whatever reason, you can always download it or listen again on the iPlayer. We'll be talking about friendship, what works, loneliness versus the brilliant positive side of spending quality time alone, and basically we'll be having a bit of a laugh and a chat. So just quickly, joining Gemma and host John will be myself, Georgia, who writes a blog called See Suffolk, Andy, who's a Suffolk printmaker under the name of Unruly Print, Cassie, the creator of thrifty blog Cassie Fairy, and Sarah, who's a fairly new blogger, just crossed over from the corporate world, and she writes a blog called Middle Age Ramblings. So that's what I've said yes to. That's what's giving me butterflies this week. I'm also quite excited about it. Do let me know what challenges you've set yourself. Sophie, who was on episode 3, she actually did go off after our podcast that we recorded, and she did go and do her podcast herself and a vlog. You can find her at Sophie's Philosophy. Very good. And it's excellent. And that's what she did. She's wanted to do it for a very long time. So yay! Big up yourself, Sophie. Well done. Coming up in the next episode, I'm going to be talking about rejection. I've had a lot of people say, when are you going to cover the whole rejection thing? Well, we're going to do it next week, because a week ago, I experienced the worst rejection ever. Or you could argue it was the most poetic rejection ever. Either way, it's a great story. And I'm going to save it for next time. It'll make all you writers out there feel a whole lot better about yourself, I can assure you. If you have any rejection stories, by the way, and you want to send them in and I'll read them out, please do that. Similarly, stories of resilience, how you've overcome these hideous things that we have to go through as writers, I'd love to hear from you. So that's in the next episode. Meanwhile, have a great week and I will speak to you next time. Bye for now. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you want to get in touch, you can email me, anne@theterrifiedwriter.com. Find me on Instagram @theterrifiedwriter, on Twitter @annehurst, or you can visit the blog, theterrifiedwriter.com.